We're holding on Ayin Beis, Omud Beis, 11 lines from the bottom. We learned about in the Mishnah about Mamzerim and Sinim and the various other classes of Jews. And of course, we've been talking the last couple of blat about the care that a person has to take in marrying, in making sure that his spouse is not is not descended from families that have in them Mamzerim and Nesinim. And the last thing we discussed was that most families have a Cheskas Kashrus in that regard. So now, Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Mamzeri Unesini Tahorim La'asid Lavoi. The Mamzerim and the Nesinim in the future, when Mashiach comes, they will be Tahor and they'll be allowed to freely intermarry with the Jewish people. Now we discussed the other day. We had the Gemara that said Mishpacha Shenitma or Nitma. Once a family has been blended in with the Jewish people, and you don't know whether they're Mamzerim anymore, then they're blended in. We don't have to go and figure out who they are. So there's a Machlokas we show him on our Gemara over here that relates to that. Are we talking about over here? So does that mean even if at one point they were Vade Mamzerim, but now it's been mixed up and we don't know? Or does it mean even if they were only Suffolk Mamzerim? So that also relates to this Gemara over here. Are we saying that the Suffolk Mamzerim are already Tahor and La'asad Lava, even the Vade ones will be? Or do we mean even the Vade ones now are? All it means is that, as we said yesterday, Hashem is going to be Matahar. Hashem is going to announce who's from what Shevet, or the Yohan Navi is going to do it on behalf of Hashem. But the point is that he's not going to do it. The point is that he's not going to do it. La'asid Lava and expose who those Mamzerim are. They also bring up the point: what happened to our Torah? Zos Leitahim Mochlefes. The Torah will never be changed, and we certainly can't have a mitzvah La Yovim Mamzer B'Kal Hashem that's never going to exist anymore. So they answer: it means it'll be a Hiras Shah. It'll be a one-time statement in Halacha that any of the Mamzerim, Safek or Vade, as the case may be, that are living at that time, will be Tahor. After that, if in the future, after that, any Mamzerim are born, then the mitzvah of the Torah will apply to them. And to be sure, once Mashiach comes, then Esruah HaTumah Avim Aretz and all that, people won't be doing Averas anymore, and therefore there may not be. But the point still is that hypothetically, if there were to be Mamzerim born after that, then they would have the dinim of Mamzerim. Anyway, so we're saying Mamzerim Nesidim Tahorim La'asid Lavoi Divrei Rabbi Yosi. That's what Rabbi Yosi says. Rabbi Meir Omer Ein Tahorim. Rabbi Meir disagrees and says, no, even then they won't be Tahor. Omer Rabbi Yosi Balik Farnem Rezarakti Aleichem Mayim Tahorim Utahardim. So Rabbi Yosi says, doesn't the Pasuk say that Hashem says, I'll sprinkle para adrumal water on you and you'll be cleansed? And that implies, and the pasuk continues, Mikol Tumay Seichem, so you're going to be Tahor of all your kinds of Tumah, even Mamzerus. Omele Rabbi Yosi, so Omele Rabbi Meir, so Rabbi Meir says, on the contrary, Kivin Chu Omen, Mikol Tumay Seichem, Mikol Gululeichem. The pasuk continues, Hashem says, I'll clean you up from all your Tumah and from all your idolatry. So we learn from that, so not Hashem is not going to clean people up of Mamzerus. Anybody who is also as a Mamzer when Mashiach comes is still going to be also. Omele Rabbi Yosi, so Rabbi Yosi answers back, sure, but since the pasuk finishes off, I agree, the pasuk is talking about tuma, about zara, and other such things, but since it finishes off, I will cleanse you, then that tells us that also they will be cleansed of mamzeros as well. Again, are we talking about the Vadei Mamzerim who exist at that point, who are not Nitma'u, who are not blended in with the Jewish people? So we said those are definitely also lover b'kohol, as long as people know about it. So we're saying they're going to be Tahor la'asid lavoi. Or are we saying that we're talking about the Suffolk ones? Anyway, so the Gemara says, Bishleim el Rab Meir, according to Rab Meir, that there's going to be Mamzerim in that time as well, and they're not going to become Tahor. Hainu d'chtiv, that explains a posik in Zechariah talking about the Gola Amitis Vashlema. He says the expression V'yoshav Mamzer ba'Ashdod. The Mamzer will dwell in Ashdod. So Ashdod is a city in the south of Eretz Yisrael. It used to be the area of the Plishtim. So the posik is saying that the Mamzerim will live over there. So in other words, there will be Mamzerim, and they will be also Lover Bakal, and they'll have that particular town will be reserved for them to live in. But according to Rabbi Yosi, what does that pasuk mean? There's not going to be Mamzerim at that point to be relegated to living in Ashdod? The answer is Kedimatagum Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef would understand that pasuk the way that Rabbi Yosef translates it. It's actually Targum Yonason on the pasuk, but Rabbi Yosef, as we find throughout Shas, was an expert in that Targum, and therefore the Gemara often attributes the Targum to him. Anyway, the Targum translate Yestvun Beis Yisrael L'Roichtzen Ba'ar Aharin. It means the Jewish people will live securely in their land, in the area where up until now they were considered to be strangers. Meaning, in other words, the word mamzer over here doesn't mean a mamzer as in the actual kind who's also lover of a call. We just mean somebody who's strange and foreign. The word mamzer, in fact, Rishonim say, is related to the word zor. The word mamzer comes from the word mumzer, which means a foreign blemish, because it's the kind of blemish that you wouldn't expect to have among Jews. Anyway, the point is, so up until now, the city of Ashdod was it is part of Eretz Yisrael. It was divided up by Yoshua among the Shvatim. It was awarded to Shevet Yehuda. However, the Plishtim continued to live in it. And so for a long time, if any Jews lived in it, then they were like strangers over there. So now the Pasuk is saying that La'asid Lava, it won't be that. They who were like strangers until now are going to be living peacefully in Ashdod and in other parts of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, so nothing to do then, according to that, with Mamzerim being at that time. In fact, Marsha points out that what it is, you know, we have the famous Shavua that Avram Avinu and Yitzchak again made to Avimelech in their time, that they're not going to harass his descendants. So therefore, in earlier times, they weren't able to take over the city because Avimelech's descendants live there. By the time Mashiach comes, that won't be the issue. And therefore the Jews will be able to settle those places. Anyway, the point is, so according to Rabbi Yossi, that pasuk v'yoshav mamzer ba'ashdod is not a contradiction to his opinion that la'asid lavoi there won't be mamzerim because they're going to be cleaned up. The Gemara continues. Amar of Yehuda Mishmuel halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. So the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, and that has on the face of it we'd say hilchasa l'mashiach, isn't it a halacha from Mashiach's times? But it has certain nafkaminas now in terms of, do we have to expose the suffix mamzerim? Do we if we do genealogical research and find that several generations back somebody's ancestor was a mamzer, do we have to publicize it or not? And in fact, Amar Rabbi Yosef, he loved Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel, Halacha k'Rabbi Yosef. You know what? If Rabbi Yehuda had not said that, have a Osi Eliyahu matik minon savroni kolorin, then Eliyahu would come when he comes and cleans up who's from what shevet and remove and take away from us necks upon necks, meaning groups upon groups of people in chains. In other words, because there'd be so many people whose ancestors were mamzerim. But because Rabbi Yossi is said, because we're saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, therefore that won't be necessary. They'll be able to, they'll be left as is, and they'll be free to continue remaining part of the Jewish people and intermarry with them.
And they'll be made Torah when Mashiach comes.
That's what we're saying. Yeah. Okay. Now, so we said in the Mishnah that that Gerim and Mamzerim are allowed to intermarry. So now we're going to discuss that point. Rabbi Yossi says a ger is allowed to marry a mamzeres, or vice versa, a geyeres can marry a mamzer. The Marsha actually adds that the Braisa has the words also that, and the children are considered mamzerim, as we learned in the previous perek, that when you have a marriage where one of them is posel, actually we said this was an exception to the rule, even though the marriage is kosher lahalacha, nevertheless the child inherits the mamzer status from the parent that's a mamzer. We learned that in the previous
perek. Even if it's the guy?
It doesn't matter whether it's the husband or the wife, either way, the father or the mother, either way the child would inherit that status. Which, by the way, that brings the base Shmuel, one of the major Noisa Kalim on Ebene Ezer, to say, even if we say La Halacha, and we're going to discuss La Halacha, that this is so, that a ger is indeed allowed to marry a mamzeres, it's not such a great idea, because that means there's going to be more mamzerim in the world. But La Halacha, it is allowed. Divrei Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda omer ger lo yisa mamzeres. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says that no, he cannot. And the Braisa continues, Echad ger ve'echad eved meshuchar v'cholol mutarim b'kehenes. Another din, a ger, or a freed slave, was basically the same dinim as a ger, and a cholol are all allowed to marry a bas koyin. So that point we're going to take up later in the perek, that a bas koyin, unlike a koyin, is also to marry a cholola and a grusha and so on and so forth. A bas koyin does not have such rules. The rule is loy huzer ksheiris li nosil psulim kosher Jewish, kosher kohanos, kosher b'nois kohanim are not also to marry psulim. So therefore, they're allowed to marry a cholol, they're allowed to marry a ger. They're not allowed to marry a mamzeres, but they're not allowed to marry a mamzer, but they are allowed to marry a ger or a cholol.
So really, the bas kohen is just like any girl. Any
so the bas kohen is just like any Jewish woman, right? Right. So the Gemara says, "My time did Rabbi Yossi. Why does Rabbi Yossi say a ger can marry a mamzeres?" So like this, chamisha kohol iksiv. Five times in the Pesukim regarding who's mutter and who's also lover b'kohol, it says the word kohol. Namely, you have like this. First, you have lo yover mamzer b'kal Hashem. Then it continues later in that pasuk, gam dor asir lo yovele b'kal Hashem. Then you have the next pasuk talks about the amonim and mayovim, lo yovi amoni or mayovi b'kal Hashem, gam dor asir lo yovele b'kal Hashem adolam. And the fifth one is a few psukim later, is when it talks about the mitzvim and the adonim. It says that you shouldn't reject them completely. The third generation, yovei lehem b'kal Hashem. So five times in those psukim, you have the word kohol.
The last one is a positive.
So the, right, that's right. And actually, so wait. So now there is actually a sixth one in those psukim. There is actually, you also have the din of Ptsua Daka, that he's also love of a kohol. Rashi and Tosfos both explain that that doesn't count, because that's not a psul of yichus, that's something else. That's a psul of he's born necessarily. No, just the opposite. If he's born with that kind of problem, it does not serve love of a call. Only if he was operated on, or he was injured or whatever, and then those organs were damaged.
He can't
marry a regular basi sirol. As we learned in Yevamos, he can only marry a giyoras or a mamzeras or a meshachreras or what have you. There wouldn't be any children because he's in. So that's one point. So Rashi and Tosfos both say that's not a psul yichus, that's a psul of the guf. That he personally is a psul daka. Tosfos mentions another point, because how can you speak of a kohol? By definition, a psul daka can't have children, so there won't be a kohol. Marsha makes another point as well. A kohol would imply where there's both men and women involved. Only a man can be a psul daka. So therefore, so for all those reasons, we wouldn't count that. With that said, Rishonim bring from the Ravid, who actually counts things differently, he does count the one by Ptsua Daka and leaves out the one by Mitzri and Adomi, because as you said, that's a positive one. Yovei lehem b'kal Hashem. Whatever the case, Rabbi Yossi is saying, you have five times in those psukim where it says the word kohol. So let's figure out what each of those is coming to tell us. One is telling us that koyanim are not allowed to marry such people. In other words, if it only said one kohol, we would have limited it to the koyanim, the same way as we find that koyanim have other restrictions on their marriages, no grushas, no halalas, etc. We would have thought that these restrictions of mamzer and adomi and mayavi and whatever apply, of mitzri and whatever, all those ones, we would think they apply only to koyanim. So the first kohol tells us that that does. V'chad levim, a second one tells us the same thing applies to the levim. You can't loan out levim from kohanim because levim don't have the same rules as far as marriage. The third one for yisraelim, because you would argue that kohanim and levim are special. They serve in the Beis Hamikdash and so forth. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi is saying you need a third one for yisraelim. Wait, we're gonna see Rabbi Yehuda holds differently.
You see that in reality is different. A laws from the levim and yisrael.
No, but the fact is Rabbi Yossi is still saying if we'd only said twice kohol, we would have figured it applies only to Kohanim and Levim, we wouldn't have a basis of saying it's Yisraelim. Therefore, the third time tells us it's also Yisraelim. Then, V'chad L'mishri Mamzer B'Shesuki, the fourth one tells us that a Mamzer is Midaraisa, allowed to marry a Shesuki. So we said a Shesuki, which we're going to discuss in more detail in the Gemara soon, is a person where his mother is known, but his father is not, so his mother may have been Mizanin. So his mother may have been Mizanin with somebody who is also to her, so the child might be a Mamzer, he might be a Kosher. Midaraisa, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, he is allowed to marry a mamzer, but now the pasuk is telling us that via this word kohol. So in other words, even though one's a vada and one's a suffix, then we're saying that it's still allowed.
Shuki is a chesed, that maybe he's a mamzer also.
Right, that's what we're saying. So the shuki is a suffix mamzer, the mamzer is a vada. Yeah. So we have a pasuk that tells us such a thing is allowed. B'chad l'mishri shuki b'Yisrael. And the fifth one is to tell us that a Shesuki is also allowed to marry a regular Yisrael, because again, he's only a Mamzer Safik, he's not a Mamzer Vaday, so Midaraisa, that would be the case. Soon the Gemara is going to explain that there are restrictions. We said in the Mishnah that a Shesuki cannot marry a regular Yisrael, but that's Midrabanan, as we're going to explain soon why. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi says all five kohols are now taken up. Therefore, Kahal Gerim Lo'ik Rikahal. Now, the congregation of Gerim is not considered a congregation as far as this, because you have no Kahal left to include Gerim as well. Therefore, it remains that Gerim are allowed to marry Mamzerim. Because there's no Kahal that tells us otherwise, because we've used all five Kahals.
Even though the sixth one you can't use.
Because the sixth one we can't use for whatever reason, but the point is, yeah. Okay, so that's Rabbi Yis. Rabbi Yehuda, what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He says, no, Kohanim Levim, Achad Kahal Nafim. You don't need two separate words, kohol, for kohenim and levim. They're all one shevet, after all. You can't say that a kohol should be half a shevet. So therefore, so you have one kohol tells us both kohenim and levim. Therefore, we have an extra kohol. So the fifth kohol tells us that it also includes gerim.
We do see kohenim always have more restrictions than levim.
That's true. But nevertheless, they're still all one shevet. You have, by the way, you have when it comes to the dinim of the parhelim dover shel tzibur, if the tzibur, if the majority of the tzibur has followed the Sanhedrin in a mistaken psak halacha, which it talks about in Masechta Hodias. So you have an opinion over there. I think it's also Rabbi Yehuda who says that each shevet brings its own par, and it brings its own par as a korban, because each shevet individually is called a kohol. But we never find that half a shevet should be called a kohol. Sure, the Kohanim have special rules compared to the Levim, but to call them a Kohol that far, we're not going to go.
That means that there should have been only for Shevet, Kohanim and Levim should be only one Shevet.
They are only one Shevet, they're Shevet Levi.
That includes both.
So that's one way. Another answer you could say is, in fact, the Kohanim and Levim maybe each are considered a separate Kohol, but because the last two things that we said, that a mamzer can marry a shsuki and that a shsuki can marry a regular yid, that we can learn from one kohol, where it says lo yovim mamzer b'kal Hashem, means you can learn from that mamzer vaday hu b'lo yovay ha mamzer safik yovay. It means only a definite mamzer can't intermarry into the kohol, but a mamzer safik could. So that would tell us that a shsuki can marry a regular yid, and b'kohol vaday hu d'lo yavoy, and that the mamzer is not allowed to marry into the congregation of people who are vaday not mamzerim, ha b'kal safik yavoy, implying that he could intermarry into the congregation of sfekas. So from that one kohol, we can learn that both of those, that a shsuki can marry either a mamzer or a regular yisrael. So therefore, according to him, so then again, you have one kohol available to teach us about the gerim. Another answer you could say is fine. Both of those, each of those is considered a separate kohol. He agrees with the drosha of the five times kohol, as Rabbi Yossi says, but the time is Rabbi Yehuda mehacha, but Rabbi Yehuda has a different place from which he can learn that gerim are considered part of the kohol. The pasuk says, ha-kohol chuka achas lachem v'lageir ha-ger. The pasuk says, the congregation, there should be one law for you and for the gerim. So then we see that the gerim are considered considered part of the congregation and the Jewish people. Whereas Rabbi Yossi would answer back, chuka achas hifseke inyan. The words, if it said hakohol lachem hager and lachem hager, hakohol v'lachem hager hager, then sure it would mean that the gerim are part of the kohol. But since it puts the word chuka achas in between, then we understand that no, it means hakohol. It's an announcement. Hakohol, you, the congregation, you should know chuka achas lachem v'lager hager. You have to have the same laws of the Torah for yourselves and for the gerim. But it doesn't mean, says Rabbi Yossi, that the gerim are actually considered part of the kohol as far as the dinim of marriage.
Same pasuk.
It's in the same pasuk, but still, you have the word chuka achas breaks it up. Like this, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, because it says a kohol, and shortly after that it says a ger, but Rabbi Yossi says it's not shortly after. You have a break in between.
Is there like a little line?
No, but that doesn't matter. The point is that you have those words in between. Okay. So that's that. So those are various ways of understanding how Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda are having their respective opinions. An interesting thing in this regard, actually, we'll talk about it more further down on the Omer, is the whole matter of Sofik Daraisa. Here we're saying that we need Psukim to allow a Sofik Daraisa. Now, you have most Rishonim learn, when we say Sofik Daraisa L'chumra, most Rishonim learn that concept is Daraisa. So therefore, so then we can say the pasuk needs to be telling us over here to be matir some sfeikas. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Yehuda, anyway, on the other hand, the Rambam holds the whole concept of sofik daraisa l'chumra is itself the Rabbanan. So then they ask on him from our Gemara over here, where we see that there are psukim that are necessary to answer it. And there are a number of different answers, among them where it's not such a strong suffix further on down in the Gemara over here. We're going to talk about various angles on which there can be a suffix on a shsuki. There's also a point to the Shev Shmeitzer makes a point you have different kinds of suffix. The Gemara elsewhere talks about, we've learned about it in Tzuvos, for example, Ruba de Ise Kamon versus Ruba de Lese Kamon. You have a suffix based on just statistics versus a suffix based on the actual facts that we have in front of us. So here we're talking about, even when you have somebody where he himself is known to be a suffix mamzer, and it's not just a Ruba de Lese Kamon. There was a Roy involved with his mother, where therefore one of them may have been an apostle. And among that roiv, they were psulim, and therefore there's a high likelihood that this child is a mamzer. Nevertheless, the Torah is telling us that midaraisa, at least, he would be allowed to marry Yisrael, and the only reason he can't is because of considerations that Abanan, as we're going to go on to say.
Also, benefits of roiv yidden in that place where...
It's roiv yidden or roiv goyim, yeah, that factors into it, yeah. So, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, so now to finish off the braisa from before, we said... We said a ger or freed slave who has the same din as a ger or cholol are all allowed to marry a bas koyin. So the Gemara points out Messiah le Rav. That supports what Rav says. The Amr of Yehuda Amar Rav loy huzru ksheiros the nasil psulim. The ksheiros among the kohanis were never told in the Torah not to marry psulim. The kosher the koyin is not allowed to marry a cholola. But the reverse is not true. A kehenis is allowed to marry a cholol or a ger. So the bottom line is we have this machlokas Reb Yosi and Reb Yehuda whether a ger can marry a mamzeres. So now the Gemara tells Dorash Reb Zera b'mechuzah ger mutar b'mamzeres. One time Reb Zera was in mechuzah and he darshan over there publicly that a ger is allowed to marry a mamzeres. Now in Mechuzah, there were many Gerim living over there, so they were all upset with him because that amounts to saying that they're not really full-fledged members of the Jewish people. Ragmuhu kula alma be'esrei gayu. So everybody pelted him with their esrei. Apparently, it was doing so. That's similar to that koyin who poured the water on his feet. There, he was a chutzman yak, and he was going against the Torah. Here, it's just they were upset with him because he's saying that they're not full, as if they're not full-fledged Jews, and therefore they're allowed to marry mamzeres. And in fact, Omar Rava Miikad Dorish Milsa he hide b'duchta d'shchichi gyori. So Rava says, how could somebody give such a drasha in a place where there are so many gerim? In other words, you got to know your audience. It's telling them zera. You got to be you want to tell them the din. You have to do it in a more diplomatic way, as Rava himself goes on the show. What happened was Dorish Rava b'mechuzah Rava, who himself was the Rosh Hashiva there in Mechuzah, one time he gave a drasha ger mutar b'kehenis, that a ger is allowed to marry a bas koyin, because as we just said, the bas koyin has no issur to marry a apostle. Everybody was so pleased with that, tanuhu b'shiroi. They all loaded him up with silk garments, like they all took their silk coats and threw them at him, like to show how much they approve of what he's saying. Then hadar darash lahu ger mutar b'mamzeres. Then he continued the drasha and said a ger is also allowed to marry a mamzeres. Omrulay, so they didn't throw a surrogate at him, but they said, Omrulay, they said to him, Afsidila Kamaisa, look at that, you spoiled what you told us. Here you're telling us that we're such a miyuchosim, we can marry the daughters of Koyanim, and now you're telling us that we're not, and we can marry mamzeres. But Rava, being very diplomatic about it, he says, actually, what I'm doing for you is I'm making the best thing for you. The fact is, now it means you have a greater choice of who you can marry. You can go all the way to one extreme and marry a bas koyin. You can go all the way to the other extreme and marry a mamzeres. You have a much greater pool of spouses that you can choose from. So therefore, I'm doing it good for you. So this way, in other words, he told them the halacha without, unlike with Reb Zera, unlike they don't get upset about it.
So this is a ger can marry a
mamzeres. So we're saying the base Shmuel on Shulchan Aruch points out better he shouldn't, because again, then it means there's going to be more mamzerim in the Jewish people, because the next generation is going to have mamzerus. But yeah. Nevertheless, it is lahalocha, it is mutter. Reb Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, has a fascinating explanation, Api Kabbalah, of this little story over here with Rava and Reb Zera. He explains, among other things, he says Reb Zera represents Yaakov. The word Zera actually means small, and we find something involving Reb Zera's legs, similar to the way that he got them burnt, similar to the way Yaakov was lame for a while after the Malach attacked him. Meanwhile, Rava is related to Avraham. The name Avraham itself contains the letters of Rava, and there's an explanation from the Arizal that in this parasha, when Avraham goes to save Loit, he's actually going to save the neshama of Rava. and the name of the place, because Rava's neshama is already embedded in light. And he explained he has a connection with Avram.
Light was light,
but still he has a connection to Avram. And the name Avram itself contains is the same letters as Meirava, whatever. The Arizal has a whole explanation that Rava is connected in a ruchniistic way to Avram specifically. So they represent the two. They represent those two others. Mechuzah itself, as you have like the pasuk in this week's parasha, Hoyad Dvar Hashem al Avram b'machazeh. So that's similar to the word Mechuzah. So therefore, that's why Rava lives in Mechuzah of all places. Anyway, so Rav Levi goes on to explain that he explains then. So the two of them represent high levels of spheres. Meanwhile, the Geirim represent Malchus, and Rav Zeira is saying there's no ability to join Malchus with the higher spheres. Therefore, they can only marry a Mamzeres, and everybody was upset with him, and they throw a Esrogim at him, among other things, because the Esrog also represents Malchus, he says, and yet you join it with the other Minim. So why are you telling us that we're limited in how much we can join with the Jewish people? He says also, you know, you have the pasuk that we say every day in davening, Hashem Shomer Es Gerim is the same letter as Es Roigim. So therefore, so it's symbolic of that. Then they all threw their Esrogim at him. Anyway, meanwhile Rava, who was on the level of Avraham Avinu, and Avraham was the one who first brought Gerim in. Avraham Megayeres Anoshim, Besodom Megayeres Anoshim. So he's the one who comes and says that Gerim are allowed to marry much more freely within the Jewish people.
But officially, Light was a guy, right?
Light was a guy, sure, but he still has a certain connection with Avraham. Avraham basically was able to extract from him the sparks of Kedusha by saving him from the four kings. Okay. Anyway, going on in the Gemara. The bottom line halacha is a ger is indeed, like Rava said, allowed to marry a bas koyin, and on the other hand, allowed to marry a mamzeres. Because, like we said, the kosher of women, the bnois koyinim, are not told not to marry psulim, so therefore they can marry a ger even though he has a degree of psul in him. He's also allowed to marry a mamzeres, like Rabbi Yossi says. An interesting point in this regard is, now the Rambam holds this halacha would only apply either to the ger himself or if the ger marries a giyuris. The Rambam learns that if a ger marries a bas Yisrael or if a giyuris marries a ben Yisrael, then that child for this purpose does not inherit the ger status from either of his parents, and he would be also to marry a mamzeres. A number of Rishonim disagree with the Rambam on that. They say, we learned before, that you go according to the pogrom, that many times the child in these kinds of cases, often the child inherits a status, a blemished status from his parents, which would mean that even if only one parent is a ger, he would have the dinim of a ger. Nevertheless, the Shulchan Aruch brings the halacha just like the Rambam and doesn't even mention the other opinions.
Oh.
Yeah. So the halacha is that ger themselves, the first generation ger or giyuris, is allowed to marry a mamzer or mamzeres, although again the base Shmuel says better don't if you can help it. The second generation, if both parents are gerim, everybody agrees the same dinim apply. If only one parent is a ger, the Rambam will hold that they're also to marry a mamzeres. Many other Rishonim will hold they are mutter.
According to the Rambam
and the Shulchan Aruch, then once they have one parent who is a born Yisrael, then the whole concept of Geirus goes away from them. They're not considered to be Geirim anymore. They're considered to be regular born Jews.
And therefore
they can't marry Mamzerim. Yeah.
Okay.
The Mishnah went on and said, Elohein Shsuki Kol Shemakir. So we said the definition of a Shsuki is he knows who his mother is, but he doesn't know who his father is, because his mother was Mizana, and yeah. So, Omar Rav, Dvar Torah Shsuki Kosher. So we said, in other words, he's called a Shsuki, because any time that he finds a man and says, you're my father, and his mother tells him, be quiet, that's not necessarily him. So, Omar Rav, Dvar Torah Shsuki Kosher. Mina Torah, a Shsuki would be perfectly kosher and allowed to marry a regular Yid. My timer, Roiv Ksheira Metzla, because we have to consider most of the women that she could have had relations with would be kosher to her, because we're talking about she was a Pnuya, we're not talking about she was an Ashes Ish. So therefore, most of the ones who could have, who could make her pregnant are kosher in the sense, in other words, that if they're kosher to Jews, then good. Even if they're goyim, we learned before that if a goy has relations with a Bas Yisrael, the child is still kosher. He's pogrom, but he's still kosher. The only ones that would make it that the child would be a mamzer would be, for example, relatives of hers. Relatives of hers. If she was an Eishes Ish, that's different. Sure. But like this, so you have her close relatives. So it's only a miut psul netzla. So only the miut of people, of men who could have had relations with her and fathered this child would be psulim. For example, her relatives, but for example, also mamzerim and whatnot. But still, the total number of those is much less than the total number of men who could father a child that would be kosher.
But shouldn't it be made a difference if she was married?
No, we're talking about where she's not married. We're talking about Pnuya. We're talking about Pnuya had a child. That's what we're talking about.
That's
what we're talking about, Shusuki. If she's a married woman, that's a whole nother matter. Usually we have a concept in halacha that says roiv be'ilus etzel abal. We assume that most of a married woman's relations are with her husband. Therefore, when she has a baby, most of the time we assume it's her husband's, unless, for example, unless she's prutza b'yoser, unless we know that she's very unsneistic, or unless, for example, the husband has been out of town for a long time, etc. But here we're talking about a pnuya. And the azli inhu legaba. Now you're going to say, what happens? So if one man leaves his place and comes to her to be mezana with her, well, then we have the rule called the parish midover parish. Anybody who probably comes from the majority. So therefore, it's a much higher likelihood that the child is kosher. What about my amit duma azli ihi legabayu? You're going to say, what about the other way around, where the man is at home and she comes to him, and then have like kavua. So then it's a case of kavua, and as we know, kavua k'mechzal mechzadami, that's considered like 50-50, la halacha.
She's considered, who's considered the kavua over here?
Whoever stays in their place, and the other one comes to them. Oh. So if she remains at home, and a man comes to be mezana with her, he's not the kavua. She is, but whether she's the kavua or not, doesn't matter. We're not talking about a roiv in connection with her. We know the child is from her. Right. But if, on the other hand, she goes to him, he's the kavua. Fine, but then it would be k'mechts al mechts. It would be half and half. But again, hatoda amra. We said before earlier on the amud lo yovim mamzer vada ibu lo yovim. And hatoda only a definite mamzer is also lover b'kahal. A mamzer suffik yovim, but a mamzer suffik could. And the kal vada ibu lo yovim. And he said only he can't intermarry the mamzer into the congregation of definite Jews. Habikal Safik Yave, he could intermarry into the congregation of indefinite Jews. So Minat Torah, when we say in our Mishnah that a mamzer can marry a shsuki, so that would be Midar Daisa, that's the case. When we say that a shsuki cannot marry Yisrael, that would only be Dirabonan. Midar Daisa he could have. So Matam Omu Shsuki Posel, why did the Chacham say that shsuki is possible to marry a regular Yisrael? The problem is he might end up marrying his sister from his father's side. What happens if whoever was his father also married or had relations with another woman? And we're not going to know that. And then later on, they both grow up and he ends up marrying a woman and it turns out to be his half-sister. Because remember, he doesn't know who his father is. So the Gemara is going to point out soon that maybe it's a rare case, but we're still. So the Gemara asks, Elamayata. So by that logic, shsuki shloisa, then maybe a shsuki should not be allowed to marry a shsukis either. Shemi yisa achoisa me'aviv, the same problem, that she might turn out to be his half-sister. The Gemara answers, kol kihani mizanu v'azli. What do you think? How many times is this woman going to be mizana? Do you think he's going to be mezana? Do you think that every shsuki in the city all comes from the same father? Very unlikely. So it's one thing if you have a girl who was born from a regular marriage. In other words, eventually what happened? This father was mezana. Eventually he settles down and marries normally. Or maybe, could be the other way around. He could be married already and is mezana during his marriage. Whatever, la halacha, it doesn't really make a difference. Because a man can technically have two wives. But whatever, the point is, so then, fine, you could say, of all the men in the city, it's possible that any one of them is his father. But here, where you're saying, you're talking about two, you're talking a shsuki and a shsukis, where neither one knows who their father are, what's the likelihood that they both have the same father? Not very likely. So therefore, the chachamim are not going to make a gzeira on that. Okay, the Gemara asks bas shsukis la yisa. What about, though, the shsuki should not be allowed to marry a daughter of a shsukis? For the same reason, Shemi Yisa Achoise Me'oviv, because what if his father ended up marrying the Shsukis, and now this is their daughter. And again, it might turn out then that the daughter is actually his father's daughter. Meaning, in other words, so what happens? So you have his foe. We have this man, the Shisuke. We know who his mother is. We don't know who his father is. His father, let's say, might have been. His mother is a regular Jewish woman, but now she was Mizana, and we don't know with who. So now we're saying, what happens? Let's say in a future. So now we know, not we know. Hashem knows. Right. Let's say that his father is Avraham. So now what happens is this Avraham ends up marrying a Shisukis. And it might turn out that Avraham is the husband of this Shukis. Here, let's see. Actually, So let's say the Shukis married. So okay, Rashi explains the Shukis ended up marrying somebody who was mutter to her. Say for example, she married a mamzer, or say for example, she married a ger or whatever. Now, what happens is her daughter might conceivably be the brother of the original of the might be the brother of some other Shisuki. And the Gemara answers so isn't that a problem? Ella lo shchicha. We have to answer. It's not very common. So hochanami lo shchicha. So therefore, you could argue, well, in the original case of the Shisuki, why did the Chachamim have a problem with him marrying the Yisrael? What's the likelihood out of all the women out there that the one he marries is going to end up being his half-sister? So why the Chachamim? Like you said, it's a rare case. Then why the Chachamim bothered by the consideration in the first place? By the way, Tosfos points out that elsewhere in the Gemara, Rava himself says that the Suffolk is Osir. So in other words, Midaraisa we're talking about. And here we're talking about only Dirabanan. Or rather, no, we are talking about over here Dirabanan, but the Gemara is asking, why should he be like this one? Let me rephrase that. In our Mishnah, we're saying a Shisuki is allowed to marry a Shisukis. Rava himself brings in our Mishnah, we also have the opinion. In the next Mishnah, rather, we're going to have an opinion that says that no, the Sfeikas are also to marry one another. Because after all, among the Sfeikas, one might be, he doesn't hold of the Droshes we said before, Rav Eliezer. He says that if you have a Sufik and a Vadai, one might be a kosher, the other might not, and then you have a problem. Rava explains in a Gemara in Yevamos that he holds that way. So the answer is, here we're saying, we're talking according to the Tana of our Mishnah. Rava wants to explain why the Tana of our Mishnah is going to allow it. So again, if we're saying that the case where he marries a Bas Shisukis, we're not concerned because it's so rare, then why should we be concerned about the case of a Shisuki marrying a Yisrael in the first place? What's the likelihood that the particular girl that he marries is going to end up being his father's daughter? So Ella, Mila, also be Yuchsin, rather we have to answer, the Chachamim wanted to make an extra careful when it comes to Yuchsin. So because of that, the Chachamim don't want the Shisuki to marry a regular Yisrael, but they don't mind him marrying the Shisukis and so forth. Midaraisa, he would have been able to marry everybody. So the Chachamim are saying, fine, you want to marry a Shisukis or the daughter of a Shisukis, go ahead, but don't marry a regular Yisrael. Because Milo also be Yuchsin, because the Chum want to go the extra mile when it comes to ensuring the purity of Yuchsin.
Even though the Yuchsin were messed up very bad.
Even though the Yuchsin, we don't want that Yisrael. Well, fine, but nevertheless, we still don't want it. He said, no, even after the second Beis Mikdash, we learned in the whole Sugya about Bava. We said for generations after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, they were still careful about Yuchsin.
But then there were women married, husbands switching.
Yeah, but you said in the first Beis Mikdash there were, right. So eventually that information is forgotten, right. But as much as possible, we do try to keep the purity of Yuchsin. Therefore, we don't want a Shisuki to marry a regular Yisrael. Okay. Ve'omar Rava. Rava also points out, now how about the last one in our mission? And we said the 10th type is Asufi. So an Asufi is a baby who was abandoned in the street or wherever. We're going to talk about soon in the Gemara. And we don't know who either of his parents are. Now you have a problem. His mother might have been an Eishes Ish. And an Eishes Ish, you don't have what we said before, that most men she could have relations with would be mutter, because it's the other way around. There's only one man in the world. Well, so no. So there you have, fine. There's one man who, if he has relations with her own husband, then the child is completely kosher. You have goyim, we're fine. It's a machlokas. We showed him actually if a goy has relations with an eshes, the child a mamzer, given that she's already also to everybody else as well. The halacha is that the halacha is actually the child is kosher. But nevertheless, still, at least in the areas where Jews live, there's a high percentage of Jews. So yeah, so there you don't have that. Nevertheless, the Rava says, Dvar Torah Asufi kosher. Mina Torah and Asufi would also be kosher, love of a kahal. My time, Eishas Ish Bebai Latoyla. Because what happens, let's say the Eishas Ish was Mizana, fine, but what not she's going to do, if she...
Roy Bila, you said, right?
So not only that, the point is, not just Roy Bila say to Labal, the point is that, they right, exactly that. If she has a child, she's not going to say it's a mamzer. She's not going to think to herself, uh-oh, I was mizana, now I had a mamzer. I better throw him out of the house before my husband finds out. Just the opposite. She's going to say to her husband, this is your baby. Because after all, they usually have relations, so therefore she's going to assume that.
There's no DNA.
So there's no DNA testing, exactly. So she figures she could get away with it. So what do you have? Miut arusis. You do have the minority of arusis who are not yet having relations with her husband, and where she's already also to everybody else. And you also have a minority of women whose husbands went overseas, and therefore the child obviously can't be his. Fine, but kibin de ikka pnuya. But on the other hand, you have to consider an asufi conceivably could also be the child of an unmarried girl, not necessarily was his mother an ashes ish. The ikanami de machmas oven have. Furthermore, you have sometimes they might put the baby out because there's a famine going on. They can't afford. They don't have food for the child, so they put him out in hopes that somebody will adopt him. Have a palgo or palga. So when you consider all of that, you have in effect a 50-50 chance that this child is kosher. And again, we said before about Torah omer lo yovah mamzeb kalashem. So again, minatoda, there shouldn't be an issue. Tosfos, by the way, brings up an interesting point. First of all, Tosfos points out that if we knew that the mother was an arusa, we would have to be concerned about mamzerus. In fact, it's not so. We're going to learn later on in our perek that even if an arusa is pregnant, we assume the child is kosher because we assume that her husband was over and had relations with her. We're going to talk about it later on Daf Ayin Hey. Tosfos also brings up another very interesting point. We have the famous story involving Shmuel, where why is Shmuel's father throughout Shas called Avuha de Shmuel? He had a name. His name was Abba Bar Abba, but most of the time in Shas, he's called Avur de Shmuel. The Yerushalmi tells a very interesting story that it's brought in the Sfarim of the early Gaonim, that what happened was Shmuel's father was away on a business trip before Shmuel was conceived. A goita comes to him. She says, I know with my astrology, with my magic, that you are destined to father tonight a child who's going to be a tremendous person, a great person. I want to be the mother of that child. Instead of having to do with her, she being a goita and he being married, he used a Shem Hashem to transport himself miraculously back to his house in Babel to have relations with his wife. She conceived Shmuel, and then he left to go back on his business trip. So why don't we consider over here that maybe the child was fathered through a Shem? What do you mean if the husband went away to Medina Sayam automatically, then she can't, why can't she claim that my husband came with a Shem, and therefore she wouldn't have to put out the child, and therefore, so what are we saying over here? If her husband is away, she'll figure she has no choice. If she was Mizana, she has no way of covering it up. Therefore, she's going to throw out the child. But why? She could always claim that it was Ali Day Shame.
How many people have that?
But still, Tosfos, right? So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. One of them is, because we find the baby thrown out, that itself creates a reyusa. That itself means, in other words, we have strong reason to believe there's something wrong with this child. Otherwise, why did she put him out? If we knew that it was an arusa, fine, we would say that if it was from the arus, she wouldn't throw him out. But like this, otherwise not. Also, Tosfos says, if she says it was Ali Day Shame, then fine. But if she doesn't say that, we can't claim that on her behalf.
Again, this the same thing.
Like, so okay, but it's still, it's, okay, but we never know. You have a hidden tzaddik out there after all, you know? Okay, anyway. Fine. So the Gemara says, so again, Rava continues.
Then going to put a baby out in the street.
Well, that's the point, in other words. So why can't she claim that it was Ali Day Shame? In other words, so what happens? Her husband is away, like Shmuel's right. Mother's husband was away for, like Shmuel's father was away for a while. What happens if the wife turns up pregnant? She can claim it was Ali Day Shame, and she doesn't have to. She doesn't have to feel constrained to throw out the baby. So then the answer is that fine, if she claims that, then we might have to pay attention to that claim, but otherwise we can't claim it on her behalf. Anyway, so the Rava continues in the Gemara, Uma tam omru asufi posel. So why do the Chachamim say that an asufi is posel to marry a regular Jew? Then again, he might end up marrying his sister from his father's side, because like a sufi. So the question is, Elamata Asufi Asufi Sloyisa. Well, by that logic, he shouldn't be able to marry another Asufis. Shemiyisa Achose Ben Me Ove Ben Me Imoy. She might turn out to be a sister from either side. And again, the Gemara answers, Kolhani Shodi Vazli. What do you think? This woman, every time she gives birth to a baby, is going to put it out in the street? No, it's a one-time thing. So therefore, the chance that another girl is punked as mother's daughter is highly unlikely. What about Bas Asufi? So maybe an Asufi shouldn't be able to marry the daughter of an Asufi. Again, Bas Asufis, really, meaning like we said before, if a girl was put out like that, she was collected in as an Asufi, and then eventually she got married to somebody who's mutter to her, such as a ger, and they have a child, maybe the Asufi should not be able to marry such a girl, Shemi Yisa Achoise, because it might be his sister. Ela Lo Shchiach, like we said before, it's very uncommon. Hochinami Lo Shchiach. Can't you argue the whole concept that the Asufi might marry his sister is very far-fetched? So why the Chachamim make a gzera? And again, like we said before, Ela Maila also be Yuchsin, the Chum wanted to go the extra mile to preserve the purity of Yuchsin. Agav, by the way, you have. Now, the concern is also an Asufi might be a goy b'chlal. But the truth is, if the Asufi is a goyish child, there's much less of a problem. You have to be Megayer them. And of course, you know, you have, when they're 12 or 13, they have the option to choose not to continue with it. But nevertheless, there's not going to be any psula yichus involved, because they'll just be a regular ger. If any of you have ever read the book, The Bamboo Cradle, it's a great book, by the way, I highly recommend it. It begins with that kind of thing. There's this Jewish couple, not yet from, living on a student fellowship in China. Akitsa, one day, they're childless. One day, the woman finds a baby wrapped up in the train station over there. Some mother couldn't afford, I guess, or whatever she became pregnant in a way that would be embarrassing to her and her family. Nobody knows, of course, whatever. Anyway, the point is, she left this baby over there. This Jewish woman found it. Akitsa, shortly afterwards, they go to a Rav to find out what's involved over here. And then the Rav tells him, you'd have to be Megayer her. And they ask, you know, why? Maybe it's conceivably there were Jews in China. Maybe she's actually a Jewish girl. And the Rav tells her, Abba, and the Rav tells him, Abba, if she was a Jewish child, you'd have much bigger problems, because potentially she could be a mamzeres. Like this, you have a high likelihood in China, where you have a billion people over there and 99% of them are goyim. The likelihood is that she's a goyta. And the whole story develops from there. Eventually, in order to be Megayer her, they themselves need to take on mitzvahs. And it's a fascinating story how through that they all ended up becoming Baalei Teshuva, and they ended up raising a wonderful family of bonim of nebonim oskim b'torah mitzvahs. Yeah. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara over here. So the Gemara tells, Omar Rabba bar Rav Huna, Motzei Mohul, suppose you find this baby out in the street, but he's gemaler. So then, ain by mishum asufi, then there's no issue of asufi, because why would the mother bother arranging a bris milah for the child if he wasn't a kosher? So then it's much more likely that it's that they couldn't afford to take care of him, and therefore they're putting him out, hoping that somebody will take him, but not that he's a puzzle.
Even if it wasn't during the famine.
Right. So now the Gemara is going to bring a whole bunch of other conditions like that, where if we find the baby in such conditions, then the fact that we see, in other words, the assumption is if the baby is a posel, the mother is going to put him out in a way, if he's a mamza or whatever, the mother is going to put him out in a way where she doesn't mind if he gets killed, because she'd rather be rid of him. She doesn't want to have what happens if he grows up and then eventually it comes back to bite her, that she was mizana and had a mamzer. So therefore, so on the other hand, if he's a kosher, she's going to try to take steps to make sure that he lives. So if you find he's gemalot, that's the first one. Also, mishalti hadomei, if you find that his limbs are straight. So in other words, that when a baby is born, you have to kind of, you know, sometimes the limbs get dislocated. You have to swaddle the baby or whatever to get them back into good shape. Then again, ein bei mishum asufi, then there's no issue with asufi, because again, she wouldn't have bothered doing that. Rashi gives a second explanation of mishalti hadomei, which is that you see that he's very large for his age, and very quick and eager and mulubon and mazuras, as the Gemara calls it elsewhere. He's like very, is a and very healthy looking. The point is, the Gemara elsewhere tells us when a couple has relations during the last 3 months of the pregnancy, that helps the baby's development. It makes that the baby is now maluban, his skin is clearer than it otherwise would be, or mezuras, he's healthy and strong and vigorous. So therefore, if we find the baby like that, means it wasn't just a one-time thing. It means that it was with her husband and she continued to have relations over and over during the last 3 months. And even though maybe it was uncomfortable for her because she wanted to help the baby. So again, that shows, therefore, that it's a kosher baby. Another case, shtayif mishcha. If the baby has been smeared with olive oil, as they used to do in those days to keep the baby's skin soft and like a sunscreen or whatever, umolik kuchla, or if he has eyeshadow around his eyes to make him look nicer, also ein by mishcha, or romi chumri, or if he has on his if he has on him chumri, which are little packets, little knots full of that are used for refuah. You find the Mishnah in Shabbos mentions that it's a segula. It's like a thing you put on the baby for a segula, kind of like red strings nowadays or whatever. So the point is that she's doing it in order that it should be like a protection for the baby, almost like a magical protection for the baby, or toli piska, or if around his neck, if you have hanging on him, there's a note, which means a kameya with writing on it, where you have names of malachim and whatnot that should protect him, or the toli kameya, or you have a kameya which has herbs in it, which is also meant for protecting him. Also, in be mishum asufi, all those, and the baby is not an asufi, because obviously she's trying to make it that the baby should be as safe as possible.
But
she's putting him out again because maybe
not a married woman.
No, we don't know whether she is. But the point is that Rashi elsewhere points out it is true if it's a girl that you still have the question again. She might be a goyish girl like in that story. She'd be possible to marry a kohen because a geyoris is possible to marry a kohen. But if it's a boy, there's no problem. Then we're saying there's no problem about Sophie. He's definitely because it doesn't matter if he's a born yid, then good. He's a born yid. We assume he's not a mamzer. And if he's a goy, then fine. We're magayer him, and then he's like any other gay. And a gay, we said before, is allowed to marry a pehens.
The word tali kamim, which would be?
Kameya means a kameya.
Kameya no means.
In Gemara terminology, the word kameya often means a kameya, means an amulet that has herbs or things in it. Piska would be one that has writing in it. Next, tali bedikli. What happens if you find the baby hanging from a tree? Obviously not by the neck or something. We mean, in other words, like the carriage. So it depends. If it's low down enough that animals could attack him, yeshma mishumar sufi. Then there's a problem about sufi because why didn't the mother put him higher up? If not, then it means she went to the trouble of putting him higher up so animals can't get him. Then there's no problem about sufi. What about Zradta? What about if they find the baby on a Zradta tree? It's in English, it's called a hawthorn tree. It has very dense, bushy branches. And the Gemara mentions in Psochim, we had it a few weeks ago in Yaakov, actually, that it's a favorite kind of place where Shadim like to hang out under such trees. So therefore, there could be a danger to the baby over there. So it depends. Smicha l'masa, if the tree is near the city, and that's the kind of place the Gemara says is where Shadim hang out, yesh ben mishum asufi, then there's a problem of asufi, because why did she put him by such a tree? V'imlav ein ben mishum asufi, if not, then there's no problem, because a tree like that, far away from the city, Shadim don't hang out over there. So therefore, it's like any other tree.
Protected from the sun.
Mashlis protects him from the sun. In fact, the Rambam seems to have the girsa the other way around. The Rambam b'chlal doesn't mention halachas that involve shadim. The Rambam usually leaves out the shadim. But here, anyway, the Rambam seems to have had an opposite girsa in the Gemara, that if the tree is near the city, then there's no problem of asufi, because
people
are around there, and the tree protects him. Whereas if it's far away, nobody may find him. So, yeah.
He's the shade to go to bother a baby?
It might. I don't know. But, yeah. Next. What about Beit Knishta? What about if you find the baby in a shul? So smichta l'masa, if the shul is near the city. In those times, it was common that the shul was located outside the city. That's why we have, for example, Friday night, we say bracha men sheva, to allow davening to be a little longer, to give people time to catch up, latecomers, right? So if the shul is near the city, and many people are always in the shul, then there's no problem with Masufi, because why'd she put him over there? The Pashto, so somebody should find him as soon as possible. If not many people are in that shul, so then there's also a problem of Mazikim, because Shadim may hang out in such an abandoned shul, then there's a problem of Masufi. Another one, If you find the baby in a hole in the ground that is used where they put pits of dates over there, they have animals, they save the pits of the dates to use them as animal food. So now if you find the baby in such a pit, then there's a problem of asufi, because again, that's something that's usually, it's usually far away from the city. So again, it's an abandoned kind of place where mazikin might be located.
Also,
animals can get paid easily. Yeah. Well, the animals that go to this paid or the sufi are going to be domestic animals. They're not the kinds that are going to eat a baby. Oh. But nevertheless, you still have the problem of mazikin. What about harif to dinara? What if you find the baby? What if he puts him in like a little boat or a basket or something? Actually puts him in the middle of the river. Harifta means where the current is flowing very fast. That is the part of the river where ships commonly go. So therefore, so ain by Mishum Asufi, then there's no problem of Asufi, because why would she put him in, why would she go to the trouble all the way to get to the deep part of the river so that a boat passing by very soon will see the baby and they'll take him in. But if he puts him in the shallows of the river where the and Rashi talks about particularly Pishra is Maloshan Hafshoras Shlogim, like where the snow melts. So it's like the places where the river is larger than normal because of snow melt, but boats don't go there because it's too close to the edge. So then, the Yeshbim is from Asufi. Then there's a problem of Asufi, because if you put him over there, nobody may find him before he dies of hunger. So therefore,
fisher guys go fishing over there.
They go fishing maybe, but maybe not necessarily often enough to find him. With that said, there are a number of other Gersois among the Rishonim, and explanations the other way around. In fact, the Oruch understands the other way around. Harifta would mean the banks of the river, and Pishri would be the places where the river is like crooked, and then boats can't easily go there. So then it would be the other way around. If you find him in the shallows, then it wouldn't be a problem of Asufi, because she put him over there. So someone will find him soon enough, as opposed to if you put him in the places where the river twists and turns and the boats can't easily go, then it means that she put him over there and she doesn't expect anybody to find him. And then there's also there's a few other explanations as well.
A woman, even if it's not a kosher baby, she still wouldn't want her own child to get to starve.
But that's the thing. On the other hand, what we're saying is, if the child is a mamzer, then after all, she may be an Eishes Ish. Remember, we don't know who she is. She may figure, you know what? I'm embarrassed to have this baby. Let me better get rid of it. And I don't care really whether it lives or dies.
It'll
affect other people, and it may bounce back on me, because eventually the child grows up and they may figure out, fine, even without DNA testing, we might have other ways of figuring out that I'm his mother, etc. Okay, so now the Gemara continues. What happens if you find the baby by the sides of Rosh Hashanah? Aid by Mishum Asufi, then there's no problem, because Sidei Rosh Hashanah are a safer area. Not many people walk over there, so it's less likely that the baby is going to be trampled. But if you find the baby in the middle of Rosh Hashanah, where it may easily get trampled or run over, yesh by Mishum Asufi, then there's a problem of Asufi. Omar Rava, but Rava says, Rishneira Oven, Aid by Mishum Asufi. So Rava says, in years of famine, then there's no problem of Asufi. So the Gemara asks, Hoda Rava Aheya, the Gemara is assuming that Rava's statement is regarding the last case at Sidur Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah, not necessarily all the other ones. So which case is Rava referring to? Ilema Rosh Hashanah, do you mean the case where the baby is found in the middle of Rosh Hashanah, in the middle of the street, and you're going to say if it's Shneir Oven, it's not a problem? Why? I did a Shneir Oven couple of days. What, just because it's years of hunger, is she going to put him in a place where he could easily get killed, where he could easily get run over? No. The Ela Atsidi Rosh Hashanah, you're going to say it's talking about where the baby is found by the side of Rosh Hashanah, my area Shneir Oven, then who cares whether it's a year of hunger? I feel the Beloy Shneir Oven, even if it's not, because we said before, she put him in a safer area by the side of the street so that he shouldn't get trampled. So it can't be that Rava's statement is referring to either of those cases. So Ela Ki Itman Rava Aha. Rather, we have to say, rather, Rava's statement is referring to the following din, a different din that we haven't said yet. The Amr of Yehuda, Amr of Abba, Amr of Yehuda, Bazavdi, Amr Rav, holds man shebashuk. As long as the baby is still in the street, Aviv v'ima, Ne'eman and Olav, the parents are believed. In other words, where if you find the baby in the street, you haven't yet taken them from there, and all of a sudden, a woman or a man comes running up and says, "This is my baby," So then, they're monim. There's a nemonim olav. Then we believe them and we say this is their child, and then they can tell us whether the child is kosher or mamzer or so forth. If it's the father, then the Gemara mentions elsewhere he has nemonus to say that the child even is a mamzer. If it's the mother, we have a machlokas who's showing him whether she has a similar nemonus or whether we'd only believe her to say that he's kosher. Whatever the case, we would believe them to say it's their child. But nesef min ashuk. But once the baby has been taken in from the street, a nemon and malo, then we wouldn't believe them necessarily to say that this is their child. Somebody's showing him, say, if both of them together come, then we would accept that. We mean only if one or the other. But whatever the case, the point is that once he was gathered in, then my timer. Now, why is that? Omar Rava, hoil the yotza olav shem asufi, because the name asufi is already on him. So in other words, he was already gathered in from the suite. At that point, he was an asufi. Now, the fact that now you want the parents to, you're saying that a man or a woman comes along and says that this is my child, and we're going to say on that basis, this is not an asufi, we can't necessarily do that. We already have a chazaka on this baby, and therefore we can't necessarily undo that. But, so Omar Rava, so now as Rava says, Omar Rava, with Shnei Ra'ovan. However, Rava continues, if it's years of hunger, even if the baby has already been taken in from the street, will still believe the parents to say that this is their baby, because in Shnei Ra'ovan, there are a lot of babies that are put out, because there are a lot of people who can't afford to take care, who don't have food for their babies. We don't want to just on the basis of a coil and say that we don't just want to say on the basis of a coil that all of them are going to be psulim. So therefore, in that case, the chachamim will relax the rules and say that even if somebody comes afterwards and says this is my baby, then we'll accept that testimony, and we can decide on that basis whether the child is kosher or apostle. So that's what Rava says when he distinguishes within Shnei Ra'ovan, is that situation where you found the baby, then somebody comes and says this is my baby. Do you accept what they're saying or not? Depends Shnei Ra'ovan or not.
Oh, so if it's Shnei Ra'ovan, you believe. Do
right,
believe.
Right.
They're just disgusting. They feel bad and they come running back.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Okay, so now the Gemara continues in this topic about the when we say that parents have a certain nemonus over the status of their child. So Omer Rav Chista Shloisha Nemonim La'alter. There are three cases where we believe what a person says, but only if it's on the spot. Elohein, Asufi Chaya or Pateres Chavisera. The case of the Asufi we just said, and two other cases, Chaya, a midwife, or Pateres Chavisera. And the third case is where one woman is saying that we're going to discuss in the Gemara now, where you find a blood stain and one woman says it's from me rather than from the other two, or not says, but whatever, does a bdikah. So we only believe it la'alter. So what does this mean? Asufi hodamara. Now, Asufi, we just said that there's a difference between whether the baby has already been taken in or not. Choya, what do we mean as far as a midwife? So like this, Titania. Choya, ne menes loima, ze yotza rishin, ve ze yotza sheni. We believe the midwife to say, when twins were born, this one's first, this one's second. So only right away, because afterwards she herself may get mixed up. Now the Ritva points out, for her to say that the child is a nosin or a mamzer or whatever, that we would believe her even later on, not just la'alter, unless somebody else goes and says she doesn't know what she's talking about. In other words, because when you have the Taz explains the idea behind it. When you have different babies from different women, you know, nowadays hospital bracelets and whatnot, but even without that, it's often easy to tell who is whose baby, as opposed to when you have two twins from the same woman, it might be very hard to tell, and therefore the Choya herself is believed only la'alto, only right there on the spot, but not afterwards. So Bamedvar Mamun, when is that talking about? Shalo Yotza, if the midwife did not leave the Chazra, if the midwife did not leave the room and come back in. Avo Yotza V'Chazra, but if she went out and came back in, Ein an Emenes, then we don't believe her to say which one was first and which one was second. Rebel Yezer says no. Chuchzika Al Oimda, if he says differently, if the midwife was standing in her position, Ne'emenes, then we believe her, V'Imlab Ein an Emenes, and if not, then not. So my benayu, what's the difference between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yezer? Ikebenayu dehot de'ahadar aka. What happens if she stayed there in the room, but she turned in a different direction? So according to Rabbi Yezer, that's still no good because she's not alamda. According to the Chacham, that's fine because she didn't leave the room.
Because she has the right side and left side.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. In fact, the Ma'ariv Bei Rav says we don't just mean that she turned her face. We mean, in other words, that she got involved with something else in the room over there, and therefore, like she's Masiach Das from the children. So now, when she turns back around, Rabbi Eliezer is saying she may confuse which one is which, whereas the Chacham say that's still fine. So that's the case where we believe somebody only La'alter. What about La'alter means right away? What about Peteras Chavriseha? What do we mean? Ma'idi. So like this, the Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Nida. Sholish noshim show you shenis b'mita achas. If you have three women sleeping together in one bed, and Rashi brings from the Gemara over there, we're talking about where they're sleeping very close to one another. So now, in other words, there's a real possibility. So now, if we find, in other words, the point is, if they're sleeping further apart, and we find a blood stain under one of them, then it's from her. But if they're close together and they move back and forth a little bit as they're sleeping or as they're trying to get comfortable or whatever, so it might conceivably be from any of them. So the nimtza dam tachas achas man, we find a blood stain under one of them. Call them tmeis, then all of them are tamei misafik. Bodka achas man benimtzas tmeya. If one of them does a bedika and finds that she's tamei, he tmeya. But call them tahoris, then only she's tamei. The rest of them are tahor. Omer of chista shabodka atzma kashiru vest. That would only be if she did the bedika immediately as soon as the stain was found. Then we have a high likelihood that this blood stain on the bed came from her, but not if it's afterwards that. So that's the third example where it's only the altar. Sheer vest that Rashi brings from the Gemara Urdiyu and Masech and Nida over there, it means the amount of time that if she has a cloth ready to hand to wipe herself, she can immediately use that to wipe. So we're talking literally just a couple of seconds. In other words, we're not talking about a full bedikah, b'chorin of a sedokin, the kind that a woman does, for example, to begin her shiv nekiyim, where that's a much more that's a much more thorough bedikah. No, here we're talking about just like a superficial wiping, which is would be that only if she checks within that time. So the moment they notice the stain, she immediately does that kind of wiping, and she finds blood. Then we say that she's Tomei and everybody else is Tahor. But if she does it any later than that, then we say conceivably it might have equally well been for one of the other women, and then all three of them would be Tomei Misafik.
And all three can't check the scene.
They can check, but even if they find their Tahor, so what? There might have been a momentary flow of blood. We're not talking about there'd be a whole flow. We're talking about a kesem. We're talking about there's one stain of blood. So it might have been one drop of blood came out of the uterus of one of them, and then that's it, you know? So
you can tell if it's that or if it's from the finger.
Yeah, not necessarily, actually. It depends what... There you have this dinim about what... There you have the dinim about what part of the bed it's on, although maybe not, actually, because people move around when they sleep. There's all kinds of dinim over there in that perek and nidah. There's a complicated dinim. If you find it on her clothing, for example, what areas of her clothing can we say it definitely didn't come from there versus where is there a suffix that it might? And the whole concept of ksavim is only dirabanan anyway. So midaraisa, we wouldn't say unless there was hargosha. We'll learn about that years from now in Masech the Nidah, Bez Hashem. We'll learn all the ins and outs of that. Okay. So similarly, the Gemara continues. Tonarabanan, nemenasachaya loimar. Suppose you have four women who all had babies. Let's say one is a wife of a Kohen, one's a wife of a Levi, one is a wife of a Nosin, and one is a wife of a Mamzer. So Nemenes Chayalem is a Kohen, is a Levi, is a Nosin, is a Mamzer. We believe her to say which one is which.
If she knows, be careful.
Yeah, Bamed Varamum Shle Kora Alei Shem Arar. Now, when would that apply? Only if nobody has come to argue against her Eidos. But if people have come to argue against her Eidos and say that she doesn't know what she's talking about, then we don't believe her. So they want to ask Ara Demai, what exactly is this error that would take away her Nemonos? Ilema Ara Chad, do you mean that only one person comes and says that? No, in Ara Pachas Mishnayim. The concept of Ara is only when there's two or more. Ella Ara today. So we have to be talking about where two Adim come and say against what she's saying. That no, this is not the child of the mamzer. This is you got the children mixed up.
Were they there when they gave birth?
Yeah, whatever. The point is, let's say he has some way of knowing let's say he says that in the past she's shown herself to be unreliable or whatever. When we say over here Kora Alar Arar means, in other words, Faket. So Rashi actually, so the Rambam explains like what I was just saying, that it means, in other words, whether people are saying that she doesn't know what she's talking about. So now that could be for the good of the baby or not. It could be, for example, they're saying she says this baby is a mamzer. No, he's a kosher. And two Adam are saying that, or the other way around. Rashi, on the other hand, explains over here Faket, that it means that there's no error on the child. You can have that somebody comes and says, and two people come and say Adris and Basedin, that the child is actually the child of a mamzer. and therefore has the status of a mamzer and halacha. So now he's not directly arguing against the midwife, but the later on, they, somebody comes to Beis Din and says, actually, this is the child of a mamzer. So therefore, so we're talking about that. Or maybe we could even be talking about where it's only one ma'arer against the midwife herself, according to the Rambam, or according to, or about the child, according to Rashi. You know when Rabbi Yechanan is saying his din, that you need two, where you have a cheskas kashrus, then we say that then we say you need two edim to undo that chazaka. Here the baby has no cheskas kashrus yet, because they were just born. So chad nami meheman, so even one aid would be believed to say, so even one aid might be believed against the midwife to say that the baby is posel or kosher, as the case may be. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan's din about two might not apply in this situation. It might be enough that one person comes and says, I know for a fact that this baby is a mamzer, or according to the Rambam, where he says, I know for a fact that this midwife is unreliable and that the baby is kosher or a mamzer, as the case may be.
Wait, like there's two people here, the mother and the chayim.
Right, but on the other hand, the mother herself may not be clear on it either, I guess. I don't know, but yeah. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and talk about more dinim, about this, about the reliability of, usually we say when somebody is negei b'dover, we don't believe them in anything, but we're going to talk about, here we have the example, the Cholia is a little bit negei b'dover, she's the one who birthed these babies, who helped the births of these babies,
she knows, right,
so them. We're going to talk about tomorrow, we're going to continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with more details about these dinim.
She has to be reliable and trustworthy.
Right. Yeah.
Right there. Okay.